History has often painted the Aztecs as bloodthirsty warriors obsessed with human sacrifice. But what if everything we thought we knew about them was filtered through the biased lens of their conquerors? When German artist Albrecht Dürer encountered Aztec treasures in 1520, he marveled at their wonderful works of art and subtle intellects, a far cry from the savage stereotype. The Aztecs, more accurately called the Mexica, saw themselves as humble people living under the fifth sun, an era born when an ordinary man named Nanuhatsin sacrificed himself by jumping into flames to create dawn. Their sophisticated civilization wasn't built on mindless violence, but on remarkable courage, ingenuity, and adaptation to challenging circumstances. By examining authentic Nahuatl texts rather than Spanish accounts, we can finally understand this misunderstood civilization as they understood themselves. The Mexica journey began millennia after humans first crossed from Asia into the Americas during the last ice age. Agriculture developed later in the Americas than in the Old World, as native plants like teosinte required thousands of years of cultivation to become sufficiently nutritious. Once corn agriculture emerged in Mesoamerica, it enabled remarkable civilizations, the Olmec with their colossal stone heads, the Maya with their sophisticated writing system, and Teotihuacan, the dominant metropolis of central Mexico. After Teotihuacan collapsed around 650 CE due to class uprising and severe drought, nomadic peoples from northern Mexico migrated southward, bringing the composite bow and arrow. Despite being labeled barbarians, these migrants gradually absorbed central Mexico's sophisticated cultural practices, settling into agricultural communities and adopting the complex Mexican calendar system that merged solar and ceremonial cycles. The Mexica, proudly claiming Chichimec warrior ancestry, eventually settled on a marshy island in Lake Texcoco that others had dismissed. There, they ingeniously adapted by constructing chinampas, floating gardens, developing specialized fishing techniques, and creating a diverse diet of waterfowl, fish, algae, and insects. The Mexica transformation from subjugated people to imperial power began with an unlikely hero, Itzcoatl, the son of a slave woman who rose to become their leader in 1426. When Moxtla, the ruthless king of Azcapotzalco, murdered Tenochtitlan's chief and threatened the city's survival, Itzcoatl seized power despite his humble birth. Rather than surrendering, he formed a triple alliance between the Mexica, the Texcocans, and the people of Tecopan. This alliance combined Mexica military might, Texcoco's cultural prestige, and Tlacopan's strategic location. Their campaign succeeded within a year through innovative tactics, including amphibious assaults across Lake Texcoco. Unlike Rome's centralized system, they maintained local governance structures, allowing each city-state to select its own leader while paying tribute. This flexible indirect rule proved stable and enabled rapid expansion while minimizing costs and rebellions. The Mexica Empire established trade networks from the Gulf Coast to the Pacific. Their capital, Tenochtitlan, grew into a magnificent metropolis with broad avenues, towering temples, and specialized markets that astonished Spanish conquistadors. By the early 1500s, Tenochtitlan had grown to perhaps 200,000 people, larger than any European city of the time, with sophisticated urban planning, water management, and public sanitation superior to contemporary European cities. Contrary to popular belief, Aztec sacrifice was a solemn ceremony where participants fasted and held sacred flowers, not a frenzied spectacle. Early Tenochtitlan saw only a few sacrifices during monthly festivals, primarily male prisoners of war. The Mexica believed sacrifices were necessary to prevent the world's end. Whether leaders genuinely believed this or used it as political intimidation remains debated, but in their dangerous world, showing weakness could make them victims. Daily life revolved around the Kolpoli, neighborhoods based on extended kin groups that formed the city's basic social and economic units. Noble families managed these districts, while commoners maintained their own identity and rights.
Women wielded significant economic power, maintaining their own hearths in adobe apartments around common courtyards. Their domestic work was essential and respected, with gender roles viewed as complementary rather than hierarchical. Mexica mothers treasured their children, comparing them to polished gems or feathers. They taught that life was precarious. On Earth, we travel along a mountain peak. Over here is an abyss. Over there is an abyss. This philosophy reflected their worldview that life was both precious and fragile, requiring courage and caution to navigate successfully.
When Hernan Cortes arrived in 1519, the Mexica Empire was at its height under Moctezuma II. Contrary to popular myth, the Mexica didn't believe the Spaniards were gods or that Cortes was Quetzalcoatl. They recognized the technological threat while attempting diplomatic management. Moctezuma, fearing a confrontation near his capital would be politically devastating, offered tribute to keep the strangers away. When this failed, he arranged an elaborate reception in Tenochtitlan. Meanwhile, Cortes allied with the Tlaxcalans, who had long resisted Mexica dominance, and saw an opportunity to overthrow their enemies. The situation deteriorated when Cortes took Moctezuma hostage. After Pedro de Alvarado massacred dancers in the temple courtyard, the Mexica besieged the Spanish quarters. Led by Moctezuma's militant half-brother Cuitlahuac, they drove the Spaniards out during the Noche Triste, killing approximately two-thirds of them. While the Mexica celebrated this victory, smallpox, brought by a Spanish ship, struck with devastating effect. The indigenous populations had no immunity to this disease. When it reached a new city, death rates surged for about 60 days, killing up to a third of the people. This biological catastrophe, more than Spanish military prowess, ultimately determined the conquest's outcome. The final siege of Tenochtitlan lasted 3 months, far longer than the Spaniards expected. When Cuauhtémoc, the last Mexica emperor, surrendered, he asked only that his people be allowed to seek food. As survivors fled across broken causeways or swam across the lake, an era ended, but indigenous Mexico's story continued. Despite catastrophic defeat, indigenous communities demonstrated remarkable resilience. Figures like Malinzin, Cortes' translator and advisor, and Tecuichpatzin, Moctezuma's daughter, navigated their changed circumstances pragmatically. Indigenous leaders utilized Spanish legal systems to protect their communities, while students at Franciscan schools preserved their cultural heritage through newfound literacy in both Nahuatl and Spanish. By the early 1600s, indigenous historians like Domingo Simón Pajín documented their people's history. Despite finding satisfaction in his life, he experienced profound nostalgia and cultural loss. In 1608, amid floods and epidemics, he began meticulously writing his people's history, collaborating with other indigenous scholars. Today, over a million Mexicans speak Nahuatl, with scholars creating Nahuatl dictionaries and artists publishing in their native language. Through the work of indigenous historians and modern scholars who listen to these preserved voices, we can understand the Aztecs as they understood themselves, not as bloodthirsty savages or passive victims, but as complex humans who built a remarkable civilization against tremendous odds. What would our own history look like if written only by conquerors? The Mexica story reminds us that history belongs not just to victors, but to all who preserve their voices against time. Their resilience challenges us to question inherited narratives and listen to the voices history has tried to silence.